It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 496 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week it's another crowdfunding doubleheader, and it all kicks off with comics legend Bart Sears. He's doing fundraising on Zoop.gg, and his book is called Heads Will Roll. It's described as character headshots of the most famous heads in heroic fantasy, drawn by superstar comic artist Bart Sears, and collected in a beautiful 144-page art book. This project will conclude in early August, and every day he conducts a poll to find out which head he's going to draw next. So you're going to want to check on that, and of course go to zoop.gg/c/headswillroll for more information. Then everything wraps up with Will Allred, the creator of Crossover Division, and that Kickstarter is going to conclude on Friday, July 30th at 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It's described this way. When stories come to life and threaten to fracture reality beyond repair, only an English professor and a research librarian have the knowledge and smarts to save us all. Join Hank Wallace and Hector Ramirez as they must end the crossover with Stoker's Dracula or risk gothic horror overrunning the world in Crossover Division number 2. We talk about the series and how it's put together, as well as other things having to do with Crossover Division, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show.
I love drawing heads. Hi, my name is Bart Sears, and this is Heads Will Roll. I'm a comic book artist. I've worked on some pretty cool projects for most of the major publishers for quite a long time now. Currently, I'm working on this really cool project called Maiden, with my wife Michelle for Heavy Metal Magazine. Heads Will Roll is an art book. It's 5 by 8 inches tall, 144 pages, and it's filled with headshots of characters I've drawn. Many of them are comic book characters, but there's also characters from all other forms of famous fiction in there as well.
It's an honor to welcome to the podcast one of my all-time favorite artists, Bart Sears, who has a wonderful book coming out right now from Zoop.gg, and it's called Heads Will Roll. How you doing, Bart?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me on, Wayne.
It's good to talk with you because, as I was telling you before I started to record, I have loved your artwork since Justice League Europe, and that may date me some, but I don't care being dated. Yeah, I'm old. That's right.
Me too.
That's the thing. I wasn't going to say anything about you. We'll leave you out of the equation. We'll do. So let's dive right to the thing that's going on right now. Of course, I've got some stuff I would love to talk with you about with the other stuff. But let's get to Zoop.gg. You've got a book, that, as I said, called Heads Will Roll. And the description, let me read it on the website.
Okay,
character headshots of the most famous heads in heroic fantasy, drawn by superstar comic artist Bart Sears, collected in a beautiful 144-page comic art book. Each day of this campaign, Bart will be drawing a new head decided on by vote to be added to the book. And as I told you, I've already signed up for the $30 book, which I'm really looking forward to getting. As I told you, my guy is on the cover, so that's Batman. So I was happy to see the head there. And
I just like Bart, so I'm not sure if we know exactly who that is.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about this, because I was reading some of the articles where you were talking about you'd like to draw heads in particular. What is it about heads that you like?
In a way, they're sort of the core of a character. They have to express. I view character as pose and you know, body type, and the head is kind of the concentrated version of both. You know, I think you should be able to tell who a character is just by how he's standing, let alone by his body type and how he moves. And I've always tried to bring that to the characters I draw. And the head is just kind of, like I say, a concentration of that, like an extreme version of that. The subtlety and expression you can get in the head, as well as, I mean, the millions of combinations of features and proportions you can use on a head just to develop a character. I just find that really interesting. I love the angles of a head, how a head turns and the nose hides the eye and just the different planes. I just find that really interesting. Plus, I can do a nice headshot in 15 to 30 minutes from nothing to ink. So that feeling of accomplishment, you know, is a big boost as well. It's just, you know, a fun way to do it. Shows especially because I can get a lot more of them done than regular, you know, full figure commissions. So I enjoy that.
Well, let me read what you wrote on here on the Zoop.gg thing. I kind of like this too. It says, "All my life I've loved drawing heads. The structure of the face, human, alien, creature is fascinating. The planes of the face reveal character and purpose, like you were saying, and reveal one's very essence. I've drawn thousands of heads in my career." I bet it's more than that. "And hundreds of them on small 5x8-inch Bristol. And I've collected a bunch of them in these pages." You might be asking yourself, headshots, who cares? Who gives a gosh darn patootie about a book filled with drawings of heads? And why on earth should I support this nonsense? I can give you a few reasons. Maybe you like comic art. Maybe you like my comic art in particular. Maybe you find it interesting to look at a different take on famous characters you know and love. Maybe you're an artist and think this might be a good reference guide to study different facial structures. Or maybe you just appreciate the time and hard work that goes into drawing comics and like to be part of a broader comics community. Or maybe you just think this is too damn cool. Bottom line, I would really be thankful for your support, no matter your reason." Which I think is very, very nicely written. You should be. You are a good writer, too.
Thank you. I prefer writing to speaking. So very much so. I can organize my thoughts much better that way. My wife's a debater. I am not.
So we know who wins in those situations.
Oh, there's no contest there. Unfortunately, she's a great writer too. So,
That helps.
It counts.
Yeah. Now, as we talked about, you every day you're going to be drawing a different head, and we're recording this a little early, so you probably, if you mention any heads in particular, it's very likely you've gotten to some of them by the time
you post. Yes,
because of course, there's a Batman head in there that I saw. Captain Atom I saw. There's, looks like Conan, Spider-Man, Wonder Woman. I see all on the webpage, which is just great stuff. Now, as I said, I was telling you before we started to record, I missed out on the, there was a early bird special to get, for 25 or no, was it? Yeah, it was $25 and there are 23 of them and I didn't get there in time. But I'm very happy with my $30 one that I signed up for, which is going to be just terrific. I'm happy for that. Now, talk to me about what's in the book. I mean, as far as it's 144 pages, how many drawings do you think you're going to have in there? 144?
Well, there's, you know, the first page, opening page and the credit page. And there's probably going to be a 3 or 4 chapter headers to break up the different collections of heads. So I think there's closer to 137. That will be in there. And maybe we'll hit some stretch goals and it'll be a little bigger. I don't know.
That'd be great. That'd be fun to do. Now, as I said, we're recording this a little early, but you're already, let's see, the goal you want to get to is $8,000 and you're over 5,500 when we're recording this. And I'm sure it'll be more than that by the time this posts.
Yeah. It started off great. It hit halfway the first day. So,
wow.
That was pretty impressive. I was really thrilled and pleased with that.
That's great. Do you know when the deadline is?
It's like 25 or 26 days from now. It's a 30-day campaign, and it started on Tuesday.
Yeah, so according to my reckoning, that's Wednesday, August 4th. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that sounds the third or the fourth, I think.
Okay, somewhere in there, but yeah, that'll be good. That's when you. Unfortunately, I'm not a numbers guy. You tell me 26 days, and I go, I go, what? How many days? Where is that? So I have to look at a calendar and kind of figure that out. But somewhere in that first week of August, this will come to a conclusion.
Yeah, we'll have a countdown as it gets closer on social media.
That'll be great. That'll be good.
If you know people see it, they can tell how much time they have left.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do people get to vote?
On my Facebook, I have two Facebook pages, my personal page, Bart Sears, and Bart Sears Artist. And then on my Instagram, which is, I think it's just Bart Sears. I never can remember. And they just write in. I give two choices. And people can just write in the comments which one they choose, which is kind of fun because – you know, some of these guys know each other, so they'll have a little bickering back and forth. And, you know, everybody has a lot of people will really greatly get into why they chose a certain character, and it's a lot of fun to read through, and people seem to be having fun with it. So
it's interesting because the one that I first saw was the Mandalorian versus the child.
That's today. Yep.
Yeah. That's, and I just, and I'm thinking, oh man, you have lit put a match in a tinderbox. With that one, there's going to be people on both sides of that one.
Yeah. Last time I checked, it looked like the Mandalorian was winning, though.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess the child is kind of fizzling out a little bit by this time.
I guess so. And that his helmet's really cool. Cleaned up version of Boba Fett. So
it's a pretty cool. Do you have a preference as far as that goes?
I've been before for that, too.
Oh, okay. Do you? Which one would you prefer to draw? And this will be after all that happens. So,
yeah, that'll be tomorrow's drawing. Mm-hmm. I'm not a Mandalorian fan, so I would choose Baby Yoda.
Okay,
whatever his name is,
the child or whatever they gave him a name. I don't know it.
They have him a name. I know. I didn't recognize the name. I had to search it when people started putting a name in there. I was like, "Who's that?" Oh, okay. But. I'll draw either one. I have to draw. I still haven't gotten to it today. I put Lion-O versus from the Thundercats versus Xandor from the Herculoids yesterday.
Oh, wow. And
poor Xandor got no love.
Oh.
It was a blowout.
See, if I'd known that, I would have put that because I like Xandor and Herculoids.
I do too. I was a Herculoids fan, more so than Thundercats, but as somebody said, I went back a little too far on that one. So,
yeah, shoot. Because the Herculoids to me were a reason to get up on Saturday morning.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
I love that. So
I will say Thundercats had the best opening of almost any animated cartoon ever.
Okay.
It was awesome. But I was more of a gamer, man.
Yeah.
But it'll be Lion-O tonight.
Okay. All right. That'll be good. Now, what's interesting to me, though, is I always wonder how people who did those things back in those days, if they had any idea the influence they were going to have on our generation.
Oh, God, no, I don't think so. They were making a paycheck and enjoying what they did, you know, just like us. I mean, nobody knew Justice League would be popular and be, you know, so well remembered today, or Brutes and Babes that I did for Wizard Magazine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get 100 people at every show I go to thanking me for that and, you know, how it helped them or influenced them. And, you know, I certainly never expected anything like that. I still get shocked every time I hear it because it just isn't something in the front of my brain, you know, that I never expected it would affect that many people.
Is that the one that surprises you the most out of all the stuff you've done as far as like impact?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. That's certainly the thing I hear about most.
See, I would say Justice League Europe was the one that I loved.
That's a great book.
Yeah.
Fun book. I didn't have much fun at the time. You know, I was new in the industry you know, it was so much work for a young guy who doesn't know what he's doing in comics yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was tough. And, you know, I look back on it so fondly, you know, at the time I grumbled a bit, but that's what hindsight does for you, right?
Right. Well, it was just, it was that whole Justice League era to me is still one of my very favorite.
Yep.
You know,
I'm surprised DC's never just revisited it in a special or anything else. I mean, I know Keith has tried multiple times to, pitch something new, just a miniseries or a one-shot or, you know, regular monthly, you know, and you get a bunch of the guys back together and you know, recreate some magic. But they just won't, you know, never would go for it. So it's probably, it's remembered so fondly. It would sell, you know, a decent minimum in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Oh, well, they just this week put out a cartoon with Justice League from the animated based on that Justice League Infinity. So I don't know why they wouldn't do that. They were able to jump from comedy to very serious stuff in a heartbeat, which of course is Keith Giffen's thing.
It was a perfect mix. I mean, there's such almost slapstick at times in there, and then a murder on the next page or some brutal, you know.
There was one page when I particularly enjoyed it when they had gotten transported to a world that, where they got shrunk, and they came across this robot of a person of color, we would say today. Mm-hmm. And they went in there and they didn't know how to run the legs. And so as it's walking down the street carrying them, the legs are all over the place and stuff like that. And I'd never forget one of the guys walking by, looked at him and says, you know, keep on trucking. He goes, I had to put the book down. I would laugh so hard. It was so funny. And of course, I don't know today if we could even get away with that, but that was so, I had to wait about 5 minutes before I could pick up and keep reading again. That just made me laugh. But then we get right to very serious stuff immediately. And I was just like,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, we do stupid stuff every day and giggle for an hour. And then, you know, you get in a car wreck or something. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was so, so good. It was just the best. So anyway, that's the one that I would remember anyway. But let's talk a little bit more about the Heads Will Roll. You've got a couple of different versions that are out there. There's the $30 one that I signed up for. And then there is the Heads Will Roll Limited Uncensored Cover.
Yep.
That's $40. As we're talking, you have 50 possibilities. And
there's only going to be 50 of that one printed ever.
Okay. What's the
you can ever get it is on the campaign.
Really? Yep. That's interesting. What does that mean by uncensored? Is there something on the cover?
The original cover, and it's got black bars over certain characters, mm-hmm. and a little sign, you know, that says this cover has been censored due to fear of copyright infringement. It's, you know, it's kind of a fun take on, you know, the way things are, mm-hmm. and I didn't necessarily want to do a cover that way. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make sure that the original cover drawing got out there. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to do it in a very limited fashion, and mm-hmm. it will be just that original beautifully colored art was colored by Michael Atiyah. Mm-hmm. And, it's just that the cover is just the art. There's no logo. There's no black bars, no dumb little sign. It's just that original beautiful pile of head artwork. Hmm. So that's it.
That's cool. And there's only 50 of them. 50. Yep. Must be it. It says no black bars, no red X, no logo.
Yep.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Now there's another version that's called the blank cover.
Yep. It's like a sketch cover. And you can, you know, buy that one separately. You know, it's just a white cover with the logo on it. Mm-hmm. And or you can pledge that level and get whatever character's head you want drawn on the actual cover, which mm-hmm. I thought was a great idea. A book about, you know, a book filled with drawings of character heads. Mm-hmm. And you can actually get your own personalized one-of-a-kind cover with, your favorite character's head on it. Mm-hmm. So it was a pretty interesting, I thought, mm-hmm. option for one of these crazy things.
And of course, that one's a little more expensive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. With the drawing on it.
Yeah. It's about, according to here, it's $150 for that, which,
yes,
you know, makes sense. That's going to take a little time.
Yep.
For you to do it. And then, of course, there's retail bundles. Mm-hmm. you can get requested headshots for $115. Although, as we're talking, 7 of those 10 are already gone.
Yep.
So by the time you hear this, that may not be available, unfortunately.
Yep. Well, if they run out, we'll have to think about adding another level with more.
Mm-hmm. That'd be cool.
We'll see how that goes. Then we're planning some social stretch goals, social media stretch goals, mm-hmm. you know, as well as other stretch goals to, you know, get different things. Maybe get all the books signed, maybe add some pages, maybe add some kind of prints, you know, and everything is in that 5x8 size, which is just my favorite to draw on. Heads just fit perfectly on that size paper. And it's just a proportion I love to draw in.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a lot of detail, you know, and it's not so big. Like drawing heads on 8.5x11, that's just too big mm-hmm. for me with heads. You know, I'm used to drawing comic pages, and you almost never draw heads that big.
Mm-hmm.
I like that 8x5 size.
Mm-hmm.
And I've drawn hundreds that size. So that's where, you know, the genesis for the Heads Will Roll book came from.
Mm. Now, there's a couple of others listed on here on the Zoop.gg page. Mm-hmm. There's the Berserker.
Yep.
Headshot number 5.
Yeah, I did 5 headshots to kick off the campaign. Mm-hmm. I did Berserker. I did Captain Britain, Harley Quinn, Noctera, and the Last Ronin from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Hmm. Very cool.
I'm also doing a drawing video, you know, one of those sped up videos. I figured out how to do that with my camera and a little, you know, camera setup. So I've got a video, a super fast video of me drawing from nothing to finished ink art for mm-hmm. each head I'm drawing for this campaign.
Mm-hmm. We should mention that some of them have already been selected and claimed. You mentioned The Last Ronin. Looks like the one that's on here has been claimed. Darth Maul has been claimed.
Yep.
Elric.
Yep.
You mentioned Harley Quinn. She's claimed. And Captain Britain has been claimed. Boy.
There's only Berserker and Noctera now. And later tonight, Lion-O will be up there.
Oh, cool. Very, very good.
If I ever get a chance to draw him today.
Real life gets in the way of comics every once in a while. Man,
comics get in the way of comics. Freelancing gets in the way of comics.
Now, as I look on some of the other covers, you've got Judge Dredd on one.
Yeah, those are just examples.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just we, you know, use Photoshop and place some headshots on so people could see what those sketch covers will look like if they, you know, choose a character.
Mm-hmm. Which is very cool. And there is also, let's see, is that the guy from Valiant? What's his name? Exo Manowar?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's Exo Manowar. Yeah. He always did a good
job. Drawn a lot of Exos.
Yeah, so Team great.
Rock and Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And what else did I get asked for a lot? I don't know.
Well, Captain Atom, obviously. I see him in there.
Yeah, I get a lot of Captain Atoms. I love drawing him. He's one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, he's the shiny look to on the metallic look is really
I remember
great.
When I taught myself how to do metallic just for Justice League.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How'd you do that?
I mean, how to draw metal shine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if you look through the Justice League, you'll see how it changed over time.
Hmm. Very cool. Because I can't imagine how, not being an artist, I mean, if I did something, it would look nothing like this. I can only envy, you know, how great that is to the stuff you do because it's just so gorgeous and well done. I particularly like the Wonder Woman.
Oh, thank you.
Drawing because, you know, I haven't seen you draw Wonder Woman very much.
Well, she was supposed to be the leader of Justice League Europe.
Oh?
So you'll see all the promo stuff I did. She was first and foremost.
Hmm.
And I think Perez started doing her book around the same time after Invasion.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want her in Justice League
mm-hmm.
for her continuity.
Mm-hmm.
So she never appeared in an issue.
Hmm.
I finally got to draw her in the fill-in issue of Superman Wonder Woman I did.
Mm.
And that's pretty much how I drew her in that book. And that's I really like that striking look in the stylized hair. I find that great for comics myself. But
one of the great things is that when you draw her heads, is you don't put the what do you think on her head? You don't cover the hair with it. What's that? The tiara or whatever is? Because in the early days, they always put that on top of her hair, and I'd always be looking at it going, I don't like that. But you do it just the right way, I think, to put it underneath the hair, so the hair kind of covers parts of it. Yeah, which is great.
Going over it makes the head kind of, the top of the head kind of bowl and like bubble over it. I don't know, it looks weird.
But that was in the old days. That was when, you know, they and Wonder Woman always wore skirts in those days and stuff too. So that's really different stuff.
Yeah, different days.
Mm-hmm. It's just it's amazing how these characters change and stuff like that. Now, as we see, as you said, the first day you were 50%.
Yep.
On that, that was a great thing about that.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. I was stunned and amazed, and you know, couldn't be more thankful that it really came out and supported me.
That was great, because this is you're coming in on the ground floor with Zoop.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of curious. What's your impression of how that's all going?
Well, so far, pretty great, I got to say. But, I mean, I've wanted to do the Heads Will Roll campaign for a while. Mm-hmm. And when I was initially going to launch it myself in January, and I kind of dawdled, and because I've run campaigns before for Ominous Press, and it's so much work. I mean, it's just all consuming. And I was not looking forward to that aspect of it, to be honest. I mean, I want to write and draw. You know, that's what I do. And Ron Mars, you know, said, hey, you heard about these Zoop guys. And, you know, would I be want to talk to them? And I said, of course. So I talked with Jordan and Eric. And I really like them, and I really love the service that they offer. I mean, they take the campaign, they run with it. They do all the fulfillment. They manage the campaign every day. They deal with everything. Mm-hmm. Basically, all I have to do is some social media and create. So for a guy like me who's not, you know, I don't care about the business. I don't care about, you know, that nuts and bolts part of it. That doesn't thrill me. I don't enjoy it. And I'm sure there's a lot of creators out there that feel the same way. And I don't think I'm particularly good at it. You know, I don't, you know, I want to write and draw. So that just really appealed to me. And they get a percentage, not a fee. So they've got skin in the game, which I really, really, I admired, because not a lot of people would be willing to do that. And, you know, I knew they had, you know, as much at stake as I did, basically. So, you know, it's a really good partnership. And, you know, I couldn't be happier so far.
I remember I interviewed Joshua Williamson, and I was asking him about, he got a contract with DC. And he said before he would always spend half of his time creating and half of his time looking for work to do.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, once he gets the contract, he could spend all of his time creating, which is what he really, really wanted. So he was real happy with that. And I guess that kind of applies to you too, as a creator. Yeah. You want to be able to do those, to spend as much time as you can doing that.
Well, my mind doesn't jump from thing to thing quickly. So I love a monthly book. I love something that is what I do. And that's where my mind can stay focused all the time. You know, and then once I'm in a groove, I can add in a commission or covers or something else. I do not like jumping from small project or single project, because I have a ramp up time until my mind just gets comfortable and I can start producing something that I'm happy with. So I really like being on regular projects, long-term projects, and freelancing is generally not like that. So that's always a struggle. And something I do not enjoy. So anytime I can get on something that's more long-term, I definitely veer towards that, look forward to that.
Great. Speaking of which, when this is done, are you got any projects that are coming that we should know about?
Well, my wife and I write and I draw Maiden for Heavy Metal, mm-hmm. and that's monthly. I'm behind on that, so I've got to start getting back on that. And I've got a 12-issue project for a new publisher I'm working on, which probably won't even come out as issues, will come out as a big book. Mm-hmm. So I'm really just digging into that and very excited for that. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of small stuff that I agreed to over the COVID months that I've got to get to, and some commissions that I'm late on that I have to fit in. And commissions are another tough thing because I don't rush them. Mm-hmm. I've always felt when somebody's paying me their own money out of their pocket for a personal piece of art that I have to deal with it personally. And, you know, a lot of artists, you know, laugh at me for it, but you know, I treat them each like their own particular job. So they take a lot of time. So.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm sure the people who get those commissions really appreciate that.
I've never had a complaint, so that's happy for me.
That's great. Well, now you mentioned Ominous Press. How's Ominous Press doing these days?
I don't really know. I haven't really worked with them for a couple years now. Oh. I mean, I'm part owner and all that stuff, but, you know, I went a different direction. So.
Well, you know, that's what, you know, appeals to you more. I mean, I'm sure as an artist, you don't want to keep doing the same thing forever. You want to be able to stretch your art muscles in different directions.
Yeah. And, you know, I wanted to write and draw Ominous books, and that wasn't really happening. So, that, you know, just changed.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what happens. Now, as far as like, as we're talking, some of the conventions are starting to open up in Florida where we are. And I know there's ones coming. I think New York is going to be opening. And I think MegaCon down here in Florida in Orlando is going to happen. And there's some other ones coming up along the way. Do you have any plans of doing any conventions anytime soon?
I don't have any convention plans, but I am fully vaccinated and eager to get back to doing conventions again. I didn't do them for years, and then a couple years ago I started, and I really started to enjoy it again. And you know, then COVID hit, and everything ground to a halt. And you know, but I'm eager to get back to it. I have I don't know if you know Jim McLaughlin from Hero. He runs all my conventions for me, so I'm sure as things start opening up, we'll get some stuff on the map and get out and about again.
Right. Do you want to go to Florida ones or are there?
I'll go anywhere.
Okay. which is great. Cause, I have missed conventions terribly.
Yeah. I didn't think I would. I mean, I didn't, like I said, I didn't go for years, but once I started going again, you know, it was great seeing all the people I had known and met over the years and, meeting all the fans and, getting that FaceTime, you know, it's just, you know, conventions are fun. I mean, they're a lot of work sitting behind the table, but I really started to enjoy them again. Kind of surprised myself, but I think I'm getting a little sentimental in my older years.
I talked to J.M. DeMattis up in Cincinnati, and I said to him, are you getting tired of people telling you how much they loved your Justice League? No.
He smiled pretty big when you asked him that question.
Yeah. He said, no. He said, they can keep telling me that as long as they want. And he goes. So, of course, I had to laugh because that was because I was telling him how much I just admired. And there were certain jokes that I repeated to him, and he'd laugh out loud when I mentioned certain ones. And I guess it's kind of that way with your art and stuff like that. People, I'm sure, come up and say, oh, my gosh, I will never forget how you did this and how you did that in certain books. And like you're saying, that one that surprised you that everybody remembers, it's great to have that kind of – as an artist, of course, you spend so much time, you know, alone basically drawing. And so when you can go out and somebody says to you, oh, my gosh, I love this. This was so wonderful the way you did it. you know, that's got to give you a little juice to get back and when you're alone again.
I consider myself extremely lucky that, you know, I've been able to do this for so long. And, you know, that's just an unexpected added, you know, bonus, you know, a humbling bonus. So, yeah, it's really, really pretty great.
Now, of course, I've got to ask you, as an artist who's been around for a good long time, do you still use paper to draw things, or have you done much with computer?
I've done a lot with computer. Depends on the job, really. Mm-hmm. I still kind of prefer paper. Mm-hmm. But like the first main story, the five-part story, I did all on the computer. It took forever. I mean, there's detail back into detail on that stuff, which was kind of dumb, but it gave it such a unique look. And once I started, I couldn't stop. And so the second story I'm working on, I'm going straight to board, old school. I'm using a rough Bristol. So it's got a little pebble to it and the inks aren't as slick. And there's a lot more black in it. It's a lot more graphic and it's a lot of fun to do. It's just very different, but that's the whole thing about Maiden is each story is individual and different. They're only interconnected by the vengeful force of the Maiden. So.
Cause I always like to ask artists, because what some people will do to like augment their income is if they have the rights to the artwork, they can like sell covers or something like that for the artwork for that. And I've known many artists who have told me, oh man, I'm so glad I did that because I had a lull in things and I needed that money in order to be able to keep going. And so they're always going, oh, I wish more people did that. But on the other hand, I know some people who have never used a paper. Pen to paper. They're only computers, so it sounds like you're comfortable either way.
Yeah. I in 2008, I took a staff job at a computer video game company in Austin, and I had to learn a Cintiq and learn the programs, you know, day one, as their lead concept art guy. So, you know, but to me, it's just, you know, it's just another tool. Drawing is still the same. Mm-hmm. You know, just a couple more tricks you have to learn on a computer that, you know, and you have to learn how to make it work for you. Actually, I bet nobody out there can tell what I did on a computer and what I did on paper.
I can't tell you that.
So, you know, it's just a tool.
Well, that's great because I am always interested because I talked with Wendy Peeney one time from ElfQuest, mm-hmm. and she and I talked about the fact that one of the greatest things that was ever invented in the history of mankind was the undo function. Because, you know, it used to be you'd have to bring out the eraser and you'd erase and you'd ruin the paper and you'd and all these kind of things.
Weird paste-ups and corrections.
Now all you do is press that undo button and bing, back you go and you can start all over again.
Or another layer and just keep that old one in case there's something you want to save from it. So
that's right.
Yeah. It's really cool. You can get lost in that, let me tell you.
Yeah.
I can make this a little better. I can make this a little better.
Yeah. So there are some artists I know who are very persnickety about stuff. They keep going and keep going over it and over it and over it. Well, what if I put a yellow there? Or what if I put a blue there?
Yep.
And shades of blue. And I'm kind of going like, well, someday you're going to have to finish it. You know. Do you find that to be something that you run into occasionally? Do you get lost in the details?
You have to. I mean, I think with the computer especially, you have to be. I mean, I learned over time on paper to be much more forward thinking with what I did. So erasing was less. You know, I made sure every step was correct before I went further. Mm-hmm. And that saved a lot of time and saved a lot of erasing and a lot of redrawing and a lot of fixing. You know, when you were done and you looked at something, you're like, oh, that's got to go. That's got to be fixed, whatever the case. Mm-hmm. The computer, it's so easy to redo, do over, do another layer, do another look. I find it, anyways, much harder to be disciplined in thinking ahead, putting it down, and moving on. Mm-hmm. You know, it's commercial art, so you have to. I mean, every extra minute you spend is money you're losing. So, you know, I find that a lot tougher to discipline myself to do.
It's funny because you do make it look effortless, to be honest. I can just see you go scratch, 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 and it's done.
You know, that's the years. Before, the early days, it was scratch, 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 erase, white out. Scratch, 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 erase, white out. Scratch, 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 rip up, start over. So, you know, that's what you want to minimize. You should become, you know, more and more proficient and professional.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, do the thing in your head first, kind of.
Right. See, that's the difference between you and somebody like me who I can visualize it in my head, but my hands just aren't in it. They just don't want to do it. So
that's also where the years of training and practice come in, you know, learning basic structure and anatomy and all that stuff is you get to a point where within your style, you see that more and more in your head. So you'll see, you know, all the videos online of people that are just, you know, doing these, this is how I draw stuff. And they don't work out anything. They just start drawing, and in a couple minutes, they've got something that looks like something.
Wow.
Whereas when you're starting to learn to draw, you know, you've got to build up with your fundamentals. Mm-hmm. But as you get, you know, more practiced and confident, you do the fundamentals in your head. Mm-hmm. So you're starting at step 6 instead of step 1. So you're closer to step 10, just starting out. But that takes years. And talent, you know, comes into play there as well. Mm-hmm. You know, some people have more natural talent and others less. And it's not that anybody works less hard or more hard, but sometimes it just takes more time.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I'm that way even about writing. As much as I write reviews and I can interview and things like that. The thing I struggle with, and everybody says, well, you should be a writer. Well, I keep coming up with standard stuff. You know, I see other people doing it. I say, that's what makes that great. I wish I could do that.
So, to me, the hardest thing about writing is editing yourself. And I don't think there's – I mean, it took me 30 years to learn how to edit myself, and I really didn't learn how until I worked with Ron on stuff at Ominous, and he would edit me. Which is, he's really the first guy that ever edited me. None of the comic guys I worked with ever said boo to anything I wrote. But he would edit me and we would talk about it. And I started to figure out how to critique and edit my writing as I did my art. It started to make sense to me. So I'll be eternally grateful to him for, you know, that. I mean, he didn't recognize it at the time, but that training of just how to edit writing. So I think that's the hardest part of learning how to write is how to edit yourself. And I think that's what you're talking about there is, you know, to recognize what needs to be fixed and then how to fix it. So.
Well, I'm sure if anybody can pick it up and know how to move forward with it, I'm sure that you're that guy.
I don't know about that.
Well,
you see,
I think so, anyway. That's what I think. So, okay, again, as we said, or the first week of August, you're going to want to make sure before then you get in and get your pledge in for Heads Will Roll. As we're talking, you're very far along. I'm sure by the time this post, you'll be into stretch goals and wonderful things will be going on with that. And
I hope so. And any help, anything helps. I mean, just sharing a link. Voting on the next day's head, participating, you know, whatever you can do, you know, is greatly appreciated. The more eyes we can get on this, the better. That's the key to any successful crowdfunding campaign. It's just letting people be aware of it. I've talked to, you know, best friends of mine who had no idea I did Drawing Powerful Heroes, two drawing books, you know, that are on my Facebook and on my things, and they never even noticed the campaigns were going on, you know. It's so hard to get eyes on stuff. There's so much out there. So
yeah.
Any help anyone can give, there's no small help. It's all a huge, huge help.
You never know your influence.
Yep.
Because you might have a whole set of friends that have not been touched yet. And when you promote it on Facebook or something, suddenly that group of eyes gets to see it.
Yep.
So it's, don't ever.
Yep. And it's really needed. I mean, so many artists, you know, are just independent creators now. I mean, the companies have moved on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've got to make our way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we need all the help we can get. And we're greatly appreciative for it.
So are you thinking about a sequel to Heads Will Roll?
Oh, yeah.
More Heads Will Roll? Or?
I've got a lot. A lot of heads to roll around. So we'll see.
So that'll be great. Again, it's at zoop.gg. Be sure to get there before that first week of August so that all these good things will come to pass, and maybe we'll see more heads rolling before very long, which would be great.
Awesome. Thank you, Wayne.
Well, one question I want to ask. If you talked about like social media, how do we follow you on social media to vote and things like that?
I'm on Facebook, and I'm going to check now at Bart Sears Artist. I'm also on Facebook at Bart.Sears. And I am on Instagram, and I'm checking that now, at, I'm getting there, Bart Sears Art.
Okay. Very good. Do you have a website, too?
I do. It's BartSearsArt.com.
Okay, very good, very good. I'm sure I sit there by the hour and look at the wonderful stuff because it's just beautiful work.
Awesome. Thank you, man.
Much success, Bart, and hopefully I'll get to talk with you again. Maybe if more heads start rolling, we'll get to talk again.
That'd be great. Whatever you need, whenever you need it.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. From flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but it's a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's great to welcome to the podcast Will Allred, the creator of a wonderful series of comics called Crossover Division. And Crossover Division number 2, The Brides of Dracula Attack, is now available on Kickstarter. So how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, why don't you tell people what Crossover Division is about?
Well, it's I can give you the high concept pitch, I guess, is when stories threaten to invade reality and fracture it beyond repair, only a English professor and a research librarian can save us from an unhappy ending. Mm-hmm. So that's what Hank and Hector are. They go around and stop these crossovers. In our first issue, we had a crossover with H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. So there was this nice Martian tripod that was, you know, walking down the street, and they had to basically put it back in its box. It's kind of fun. It lets me play with a lot of what I consider kind of foundational works, you know, of our present day culture, and, you know, look at them maybe through a slightly different lens. You know, what's cool about them, what's maybe not so cool about them, and it's a lot of fun to do.
Now, see, what interests me is in your description of yourself, it says you're a writer, professor, and technologist.
That is true.
What's a technologist, as far as the way you describe it?
That's a fancy way of saying an IT guy. Okay.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I wondered if you were a medical technologist. That's the only technologist I ever heard of before. So I wondered if you're a medical technologist or something like that.
No, I work on, during the day job, hardcore kind of infrastructure, storage, virtualization, compute, storage, that kind of stuff.
Wow.
It's lots of fun, you know, because there are definite problems to solve, you know, as you scale out, and it's like a big giant logic puzzle. You know, it's how does this all fit together, and how can we use it to, you know, do the things that we need to do? So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
So what are you a professor of?
I actually have a PhD in English, and I've stepped away from teaching for just a little bit, but I teach English. When I, as an adjunct in one of the local community colleges here, and occasionally they'll let me teach about every 2 to 3 semesters. They'll let me teach a comics and graphic novels class, which is so much fun that it's kind of probably not morally right that I get paid for it. But anyway, it's a lot of fun. I mean, and I'll be honest, I was a bit surprised at how much I enjoyed the teaching aspect. You know, being in a classroom, you know, this is English, you know, 101, you know, this is the basic English class, you know, for students as they come into the, you know, community college. And like I said, I was really surprised at how much fun it is. It's a lot like being, you know, you have to be kind of like you're on stage and you're performing, as you're trying to teach. And it was both really invigorating and also really exhausting, at the same time, but, it was a lot of fun. And the comics and graphic novels class was just great because it was, hey, you know, I'm going to try to do this survey of, you know, American comic, you know, mainstream American comics. It was, you know, nothing too deep, you know, and we talked about, you know, Watchmen, and we talked about Dark Knight, and we talked about, you know, V for Vendetta, and All-Star Superman, you know, a lot of the writers that I really like, Transmetropolitan, Planetary. I even snuck Walter Simonson's Thor in there because I am a tremendous fanboy, I think everybody actually enjoyed it. It was my kind of, you know, this is what an 80s Marvel comic, the best of the 80s Marvel comics, you know, kind of looked like. You know, we didn't get into Daredevil or, you know, Burns Fantastic Four, but, you know, Walter Simonson on Thor is just, it's one of those things that I, you know, go back to and reread occasionally just because it's so amazing.
Now we went from a Norse thunder god to a horse thunder god.
Yeah, exactly. Ba-dum-bump, right?
Yeah, which I always found interesting. I mean, you know, they keep trying to revive Beta Ray Bill every once in a while, and I'm always kind of interested, but it never seems to go. I'm always interested in that kind of stuff because sometimes my favorite characters in Marvel, it's a little off the subject, but are the B and C and D level people. My favorite's the Black Knight, who I really like.
And one of my faves, a scientist with a magic sword. He's such a great character.
I get such a kick out of it. I like it so much. I like swords and knights and things like that. So I'm always interested in it. And I like the idea of a guy trying to redeem the line of people. His father was a criminal, and he's trying to redeem the name and stuff like that. So that whole thing I like. So
one of my favorite pages in a comic is, because I'm a big fan of Roger Stern's Avengers, is where the Black Knight, with the ebony blade and Cap's shield, is basically staring down an enraged Zeus. Like, that's like the splash page to number 284, 285. I can't remember, but I just love it. It's awesome. But yeah, I completely get you about the B and C characters. My favorite character, absolutely bar none, is Quasar from Marvel. I love that series and I love that character.
It sounds like you're more of a DC guy than a Marvel guy.
You know, it's my first comic that I remember, and this, who knows, you know, memories play tricks on us, but my first comic that I remember is a Green Lantern comic. I think it's like 124 or something like that. But as I got older, I was really a Marvel guy. I probably almost read the official handbook of the Deluxe Universe issues that I had to pieces because I read and reread and read and read and read them so many times. And, you know, the Avengers, there's writers that I really don't feel like get the respect that they deserve, like Mark Gruenwald, you know, who had a decade long run on Captain America. You know, he also wrote Quasar, which, you know, of course, my favorite. But look at Roger Stern. I mean, you know, the kid who collected Spider-Man. That is a, and then all of the work that he's done, you know, after that, you know, his run on the Avengers is, you know, one of those books that, you know, I looked forward to every month, you know, when it came out. You got guys like David, and I'm probably going to butcher his last name because I'm not quite sure how to say it, but Michelini.
Okay,
I mean, his work on Iron Man, and then, you know, just all across his work on Spider-Man, you know, Amazing Spider-Man. I mean, those guys, they're great journeymen. They knew how to tell a story, and they got in and they got out, and it was, you know, it's just work that has tremendously influenced me, I think, you know, as I've been trying to, you know, write comics.
How much of that do you think influenced your storytelling?
I think it's probably more than I think, just because it's so much a part of me, you know, having read those issues so many times, it's hard to see where those influences end and I begin, I think. You know, and that's not to say that, you know, there are, you know, the towering giants like Alan Moore or Neil Gaiman, you know, those guys, of course, you know, how can you read anything by Moore or anything by Gaiman and not be influenced by it, you know? But at the core, you know, those guys, I feel like are, you know, or someone like John Ostrander, you know, who doesn't necessarily get, you know, the accolades I think that he probably deserves. But I feel like they're kind of woven into my DNA at this point.
Wow. Well, that's great. You could do much worse, believe me, as far as that. So this is a good one. So, all right. So you did a Kickstarter previously for the first issue that was 48 pages long. And that one, you had a successful Kickstarter for that, which was great. You were asking for $4,000 and you made more than that, which is always a wonderful thing to happen at a Kickstarter.
Absolutely.
And now, of course, you're taking all that now into the second one. Interestingly enough, you are asking for the same amount as you did the last time. And as we're talking, which is a little ahead of time, of course, you have not yet met the goal, but I have a feeling it's going to be not too long before you actually get, you know, past that 4,000 and into the stretch goals and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Setting goals on Kickstarter is more, I think, black science than it is, you know, or black art than it is a science. And the, you know, the goals are kind of the minimum, at least in my mind, when I approach it, it's like, you know, the bare minimum that I can get by with, you know, producing this book. It doesn't necessarily cover all the costs, but, you know, I want to get this thing out into the world. So I kind of settled on that number for now. And hopefully, you know, you're right. We've been just about a week in to this one. It's a 30-day campaign, basically all of July. And we're sitting at about 83%, I think, funded right now. So we're definitely on the track. I don't want to take anything for granted, but I'm hoping that we go ahead and get, you know, funded pretty soon. And then you're right. There's stretch goals to worry about. I've been, you know, talking with the rest of the team, and I think we've come up with some pretty decent ones that we'll be revealing, you know, once we hit the funding mark soon, I hope.
Yeah, I backed it, of course, and I pledged for the deluxe digital catch up. I always tell people, unfortunately, I have been reading comics for a long time, and as such, I have a lot of hardcovers and trades and stuff that I have, like in three chests, or I don't know if you want to call them. The where I can sit and look at all of them as I talk and stuff like that. And the interesting thing about it is that I have so many of them now, it's hard for me to buy hardcovers and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I hear you.
I don't have much room left. I have a stack of books. I always tell people, as tall as I am, that as I've gone to conventions, I always pick up indie books and try to make sure that I get a chance to read them. And unfortunately, I'm behind. And so being that the way it is, I tend not to get the hardcovers. It just depends. I'll get a hardcover, but then I got to clear something out of my stuff so that I have room for it. Otherwise, I have a lot more room on my hard drive. So I tend to go with the digital books a lot these days, and that's why I got that.
And you know, digital is a really great thing, and that's one of the. And I completely understand that because I've got long boxes sitting in the garage that I need to go through and get filed away and all that stuff. And then hardcovers on bookshelves here in the house, and trades and all that stuff. And definitely digital has that appeal because, you know, I can just buy a bigger hard drive, right? It doesn't take up much space. It's pretty awesome because, you know, I've got a lot of, you know, I back a lot of Kickstarters too. And I will go for the digitals a lot just because, you know, you're right. Our space is finite. You know, we can't just keep filling it up forever. But I can say that as a creator, there is no other feeling than holding a printed book in your hand. There's nothing like it. You know, it's like, we made this, you know, And speaking of the we, I need to mention the rest of the team because, you know, I'm just the humble writer. Our artist, Pablo Martinena, he's been producing some amazing work on this, you know, his covers. And then all the interior work is by him. He does the pencils, inks, and colors for the book. So he's quite the triple threat. And then Brant Fowler is our letterer and designer. And he designed our logo. And, I mean, the book, he just makes the book look so good. And originally in our first issue, Hassan Osman Elhau was our editor. And I think I'm contractually obligated to say this, Eisner Award-winning Hassan Osman Elhau. We had an Eisner winner on our team, which is just boggles my mind because it was so amazing. He's our editor. But he, because he is so busy, he had to step away. So we, for the second issue, brought in an editor, his name's James Powell. He's also the writer of House of Fear, which has come out through Dark Horse. And he's also got a Kickstarter coming up, I think later this month for the latest issue of House of Fear. But that's kind of our team. And I love working with these guys. And then from the Kickstarter standpoint, you know, a single issue is a bit of a harder sell, I think, because you're not getting as many pages. And, you know, based on that, you still have to price it because you have to print it and then, you know, pay the art teams and everything. But I rounded up, I feel like, just an amazing group of variant cover artists. We've got Yasmin Montanez. We've got Kath Lobo. Alice Leclerc is doing this. She's actually doing a cover during the campaign so that we're going to see the process as she does it, which I think is just really cool because I'm kind of a process junkie. So, you know, we start out with her, you know, her cover, her rough sketch, and then, you know, the pencils and the inks, and then finally the cover, you know, the colors when she does it. And then, you know, Brant will work his magic with the trade dress and all that fun stuff. And then finally the, you know, Jen St. Ange did an amazing cover for us too. So we've got, you know, all of these really beautiful cover so that anybody can kind of pick and choose what they want. I love working with artists. It's so much fun. It really is.
It's something when you see your idea on the printed on the page, I suppose. I shouldn't say printed right away, because the first time you actually see your stuff through an artist's perspective, it's got to be something special.
Oh, it is, because it's you know, I can describe a scene and I'm thinking, okay, this is the way I see it. And then when it comes back from Pablo, or, you know, even the other artists that I've worked with, like Gene or even Ryan Kroboff on some, you know, anthology work that I've done, or John Eddingfield on the Tales Not So Fair to Tale, which I think just ended not too long ago. But working with artists is great because, you know, I can describe it a certain way and I have it in my mind pictured a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And invariably, they'll come back with something that is so much better. You know, it, because they're able to pull out the really important stuff, you know, inside that description and make it better. And that's one of the things that I, you know, love about comics is, you know, the collaboration. We get to work with other creators and make something that I hope is better than any single one of us could make by ourselves. You know, that's what we're after here, is to make something, you know, the best that all of us can make it together.
That's really cool. The reason I say that is because I've been like an editor for an indie comic, and I was working with the creator, and he was looking for an artist, and we would send out a certain character and ask for a profile to come back. Mm-hmm. And a couple of them came back and we were just sort of like, yeah, okay. And then the guy that ended up being the artist, he sent back a drawing of the bad guy in the first issue. And we just went, wow. That is just amazing. Look at that. And he ended up being the artist on the book. So it's funny how when you do those kind of things, when sometimes the artist inspires a story in you that you hadn't even really thought of.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, things will come back and like, oh, hey, you focused on this. That means we can change this over here and make that connection stronger, you know, toward the back end of the, you know, there's just it's all this feeding off of each other that is just awesome. Yeah.
It's the creative process. It's just it's something stunning. Well, let's get into the book. Crossover Division. I like the name. That's a good CD. Kind of a nice name for it. Now, the characters are named Hank Wallace and Hector Ramirez. Mm-hmm. Are they based on somebody or people that you know? Or are they products of your imagination? Where did they come from?
You know, it's – I'm it's funny, and I think I've told this story a couple of times. I first kind of thought of Crossover Division and it was very, very dark. I mean, it wasn't even Hank or Hector that first came to me. It was kind of a character that was going to get retired or something. But, you know, I think I was on a run or just finishing a run or something like that. And, I just saw this guy kind of like in a Men in Black suit, sitting down with, you know, kind of blood all over his arms, you know, just kind of sitting there tired. And he was like, you know, a man can only gut Black Beauty so many times. Like, wow. That's really, really dark. And I moved away from that, but that was kind of the core of the, you know, cause Black Beauty is this fiction. I'm like, well, how would, you know, these guys deal with it? And then I started kind of building, you know, Hank, and, you know, there's probably a lot of me in Hank, and there's probably a lot of me in Hector as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, building up how this world would work and, you know, what does a crossover look like? What, you know, the dreamer, you know, the person that kind of the nexus that causes these crossover events in different places, you know, there's, you know, this person loves War of the Worlds so much that, you know, they create a bridge between War of the Worlds and, you know, our reality or the reality of, you know, Hank and Hector. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it took a long time, honestly. I was in the Comics Experience Creators Forum, which is a great place. Great place to get feedback on scripts and everything. And, you know, meet other creators and other artists and network and things like that. And that was awesome. And then moving, you know, besides that community, there's the Comics Launch community, which is, you know, built around Tyler James and his ability to help, you know, comics on the Kickstarter platform. And, you know, it's really, you know, it's just great, you know, being in a community where, you know, and comics is such a supportive community, you know, everybody out there wants, for the most part, everybody to, you know, put their best stuff out and, you know, succeed and they're so willing to help. And, you know, it took Crossover Division a while to finally, you know, I you know, wrote the script for, I think, probably one and two, probably three, 4 years ago, if not more. You know, getting feedback on them, refining them. And it, I think it finally turned a corner after the successful Kickstarter for a collection of a series that I did called Diary of Night, which is kind of this new take on vampires. But once I got that collection and fulfilled and everything, I decided, you know, look, I'm going to spend, you know, maybe a few years working on something. What do I want it to be? And, you know, Crossover Division was kind of the thing that was, you know, keeping me awake at night going, okay, I really want to tell, you know, this story and, you know, why these stories are important. So at that point, I thought it was really important to find an editor because, and, you know, this is something I would tell my students in, you know, in the writing class, you know, basically was, you are your own worst editor. You see what you see what you hoped to be on the page. You don't actually see what's there. So, getting an editor, initially that was Jim Gibbons and then it was Hassan and, you know, now it's James, but getting that second set of eyes to really make sure that, you know, the story is as good as it can be, because I feel that pressure personally. The script needs to be as good as I can possibly make it, because the art is built on top of that, you know, the pencils, the inks, you know, the colors, then the lettering is built on top of that. So, you know, if the editor and I haven't done a good job building that, you know, really solid foundation, then, you know, it doesn't matter how awesome, you know, the rest of it is, you know, I've kind of failed. So, you know, I feel that pressure. So that's one of the reasons I went out to get an editor. And then we, once we kind of got the pitch down and, we worked, part of the pitch was a short 8-page story. It's actually it's kind of the second feature in the first issue. It's, The Wizard of Oz. Once we kind of got that down, then we started looking for an artist, and I lucked into finding Pablo. I think I found him via Twitter. You know, I put out the call and said, "Hey, I'm looking," and I got a lot of great submissions, but his kind of just hit that spot that this is how it should look. And then, of course, he's completely made it his own, you know, at this point. We kind of moved slowly from there, you know, getting that 8-page done. And then that little pandemic thing happened, you know, it's still going on. And I'll be honest, I was shocked, because, you know, Diamond shut down, you know, the big companies, they all shut down, you know, hey, pencils down, right? Stop, stop working. And because my initial thought was that 8-page story was going to kind of form the core of that pitch package, you know, and we'd go take it to various publishers. And I knew I wanted to do Kickstarter, but I didn't know if, you know, Kickstarter was going to be kind of a side thing to what was going on with a publisher. And then when everything stopped, I was like, wow, you know, there's a lot of creators out there that are wanting to produce work and they can't because they don't have the control. And that really kind of opened my eyes, and I changed tactics. I said, you know what? I know a few creators that have been serializing comics on Kickstarter. There's, you know, Kevin Joseph, and his Excellent Tart series, Kat, Calamia and her, Like Father, Like Daughter. I don't know, and I can't remember the name, I'm sorry, but, the person that does Miskatonic High. I mean, there's a lot of series that have got, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 issues that have all been serialized via Kickstarter. So I'm like, okay, this could work. Right. And so we decided, you know, once we had most of the first issue done, we just said, hey, we're going to do this on Kickstarter. And the goal is, you know, to get an issue pretty much done, you know, within a few, you know, 2-3 pages, I hope, and kickstart it, hopefully succeed in the Kickstarter, fulfill that, move on to the next issue, and just kind of keep going. It's Kickstarter's kind of a roller coaster. It really is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I often say that it's the daily heart attack.
It can be. Yes, it certainly can be.
you refresh the screen and the number doesn't change. And you worry that, oh, no, everybody that's going to support me has supported me and I'm done.
And I'm never going to get another backer again. I've never thought that. Only
thank goodness.
Every day.
Because, you know, I often say on this podcast that I wish Kickstarter had been around longer or sooner, because I always fear for all the stories that I never got to read.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, DC or Marvel or Image didn't pick up, and therefore they just never got told. And I really hate that. Now, of course, you're preaching to the choir here. I'm an editor.
Yeah.
And I have to tell my little story I always tell. You know, there's a difference between Let's Eat, Grandpa, and Let's Eat Grandpa.
That's right.
Which not everybody gets, you know, but I always try to tell that, because commas are, well, a lot of people say, I just sprinkle them wherever I feel like it. But you change the meaning when you do that stuff. Always my roommate got me a shirt that says, punctuation saves lives. Because
exactly. Absolutely.
So, I just am always, and honestly, a lot of indie comics I think struggle, because if you throw too many word blocks or roadblocks in front of people, they eventually give up and say, well, I can't figure this out. I don't know what's going on. I'll go to something else. We're constantly bombarded with competition for our attention. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be able to get that right and make it work, or else people are just going to give up, sadly. And, you know, it's great that as a professor, as a teacher and stuff, you're likely to be able to get those things down. And I have a friend of mine who's a Star Trek fan, and he can't spell Roddenberry. And he can't spell phaser. And I'm always telling him, come on, man, you're a Star Trek fan. You've got to spell those right. And so I always, this is my job, is always to step in there and say, no, you know, Roddenberry has no U's in it. You've got to fix that. So it's just funny how that works.
Yeah. And, you know, failure is a really great teacher, because the first Kickstarter I did was for that collection of Diary of Night, and it failed miserably. You know, I did not know. I didn't even know what I didn't know at that point. And, you know, after it failed, you know, I took a step back. I'm like, okay, there's so much I don't know. Is there somebody out there that can help me? Mm-hmm. And that's when I discovered the Comics Launch podcast and Tyler James. And, mm-hmm. you know, he has a full on, you know, everything is, the podcast is free, but then he also does some, you know, teaching type stuff, you know, through the Comics Launch Pro program. And then I started learning just the vast amount of stuff that I did not know about launching comics on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And after, I think it was a year later, year and a half maybe, he funded the Diary of Night collection, the hardcover and the softcover. Mm-hmm. And it was gratifying to know that, hey, yeah, you know, look, even, you know, I can learn this stuff and I can do this stuff. You know, it's not beyond me, because mm-hmm. that's, you know, and I don't know for how many comic creators I speak for, but I know it's certainly me, is I am mostly an introvert. When I teach, you know, I have to really dig deep into that tank of energy to, you know, to be that extrovert, to be on and, you know, on stage essentially, you know, for the class. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of, you know, I don't really, you know, want to be out there, you know, I would rather be writing, you know, I would rather be,
of course.
You know, reading or writing than, you know, putting myself out there continually, because the whole promotion and marketing stuff is just, you know, it's something that, yeah, it's so tough, and it's something that I know that I am probably not very good at. And so it's one of those things where, like, okay, I'm not very good at it, so I'm probably not going to put as much attention on it as I probably should. Mm-hmm. and do something else that I'd rather, you know, enjoy more, like, you know, writing another issue or staring at, you know, art that's coming in, because let's face it, the best emails in the world are art emails, right? And, you know, that's, you know, it's a journey. It really is, because, you know, there's, you know, hey, I've gotten better at this. That's great. Well, then there's a, you know, the line forms here of all the things that I still need to get better at. Right.
So, well, that's true. But now I'm interested in crossover division, how you choose the fictional stories to get involved, to have the two main characters get involved with. Are these ones that you prefer? Does the artist, because they want to draw certain characters, how do you decide what the crossover is going to be with?
Well, it's one of the things I wanted to do is, you know, there are a lot of works that are in the public domain. Well, one, public domain is, of course, probably the biggest factor, but there are a lot of works in the public domain that are kind of foundational to our present culture, even. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's probably a subgenre of, you know, dramas and or sitcoms and movies that have all utilized, you know, the basic plot of A Christmas Carol.
Mm-hmm.
That work by Dickens is so foundational to, you know, a lot of our culture, you know, a lot of our traditions that we even have, you know, during, you know, the holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I wanted to look at works. I try to find works that, you know, are really part of kind of this, you know, common cultural memory that we have, you know, something like Dracula, for instance, Dracula is probably a lot more a part of our cultural consciousness than, say, War of the Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
But I am a huge fan of H.G. Wells and what he was trying to do, you know, with kind of reinventing what would become modern science fiction, you know, with it being social fiction. You know, it's a lens on the present. And so I one of the things that I kind of, looking back at number one, I realized I didn't do as much as I wanted to, because there was so many other things that I, you know, there was so much other heavy lifting to kind of, you know, introduce the characters and do these things, you know, that needed to be done to establish the series, establish how everything works and things like that. And I didn't do that very well in the first issue, but in the second issue, I also want to kind of comment on some of the, you know, really cool things about the work in general. And then also, maybe some of the Dracula in particular, you know, maybe some of it's short, you know, where it falls short a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of fun. You know, it's like, hey, this is why it's good. And this is why, you know, maybe it's not so good, but you know, here it is, warts and all. And that's one of the reasons why I like writing the little essays. In Crossover Division One, there's an essay on the War of the Worlds. You know, it's a little one page essay about, hey, yes, I stole it, but I'm telling you where I stole it from, so you can go steal it too, right? kind of thing. So, and I did the same thing for, you know, The Wizard of Oz, which was our short 8-page story.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be one on Dracula in, you know, in issue number two,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I got to get to writing that, because we've got 3 weeks to get it done. So there we go. works that are coming up, you know, there's going to be a Shakespeare, one of the plays coming up, because there is one particular play that annoys me no end. And we'll, when we put the coming soon, you'll probably guess what it is. But there are some other, you know, Sherlock Holmes is one of these characters that is, you know, been invented and reinvented and so many times, even in recently, you know, you had the Sherlock series on the BBC, which was, you know, awesome. You know, Elementary, I think, you know, was it on CBS not too long ago? You had the, even recently, what was the young woman from Stranger Things was in, it was a kind of a Sherlock Holmes, the younger sister of Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, I remember. I saw that. I don't remember the name of it, but yeah, I remember that.
But I mean, it's just a charming little movie. I mean, it was really a great little thing. But, you know, Sherlock Holmes finds, you know, we find Sherlock Holmes in so many different places. And, you know, I want to play with that a little bit, because, you know, there are really great things about, you know, the character and you know, what Conan Doyle created. Mm-hmm. And there are some kind of, you know, not so great things about it too, but it's endured, for a century, right? So there's something in there that people keep coming back to. Mm-hmm. A book like Frankenstein, Mary Shelley was, an amazing writer who built this, gothic horror that, endures, today, because it's such an important work. I'm trying to think of what else I've got coming up. Something like, look at Dr. Jekyll and Mr. The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Mm-hmm. That book influenced the creation of a certain, green-skinned behemoth from Marvel Comics, and we get the Avengers, right? So, I mean, it's fun, kind of, looking back at these works and how influential they are, and getting to play with them. I mean, it's really fun as a writer getting to play with, Dracula, not a nice guy at all, really.
And it's interesting. You make a good point. And you make a good point, though, that people, a lot of people who are today, don't recognize that those are the roots. So I think that's great.
Yeah, and I think the amazing thing is that, not a lot of people, I guess a lot of people actually have read Frankenstein, but so many more haven't, and yet they're still familiar with the story. It's that kind of, way in which those works kind of just permeate this kind of collective unconscious that we have. It's just so cool to know that, wait a minute, you've never actually read Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, but you know the story. You've never read A Christmas Carol, but you know the story. How does that, this cultural osmosis that we have, which is just fascinating to me.
Now, see, you've touched on something that gets me. One time I actually sat down, I said, okay, I'm going to read A Christmas Carol all the way through. And I was stunned how much is in there that a lot of the movies and TV shows and stuff that are based on it didn't bring in. Mm-hmm. There's in The Christmas Present, they go to a ship where all these sailors are celebrating Christmas on the ship. And I never saw that before. And I was like, wow, I said, I'm going to have to read this on a semi-regular basis just to kind of refresh myself. Cause I was just stunned at that. That was such a great thing. And nobody ever talked about.
Well, yeah. And we're at the mercy of whoever's doing the adaptation, right? They're pulling out what they feel like is the most important. And, a lot of adaptations are just amazing. But then, that's what it is. It's an adaptation. It's not the original. It's like going back to the source, I'm going to go all Jack Kirby here. Fourth wall source, right? Sorry. I think it's so important to read, and that's one of the things that I make sure I do is, try to reread these before I dive back into, trying to, to structure an issue. And, for instance, and I just remembered, because I just finished writing it, a really rough, I think they call it the vomit draft. Anyway, in number five, Hank and Hector will be coming up with the Island of Dr. Moreau. So I needed to go back and reread, what are the themes of it? What was Wells trying to get at, with these things? And the Victorian attitudes toward, hybridity and hybridization were, on full display there. And I'm like, okay, wow, this is interesting. I can play with that. It really is a lot of fun. I will say, having reread, and sometimes for the first time, a lot of Shakespeare not too long ago, is not as enjoyable as I'd hoped it would be. I think part of it has to do with the language, and I'm just not, I'm not a Shakespeare scholar. I mean, when my work in academia was actually around comics. They, the suckers gave me a degree for it. But so I don't necessarily have that deep knowledge of, you know, say a Shakespeare scholar. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I know a lot of places where I can go to find out a lot of that stuff, which is pretty mm-hmm. awesome.
Which is great because, you know, we need to know more about mm-hmm. those kinds of things. Because a lot of the times in this podcast, what I'm doing is I'm trying to fill out a little bit of the background. So people, when you read the story, you can say, oh, okay, that's what he was talking about. And that's why that was that way. Mm-hmm. Because I'm interested in the why. Why did you decide? Why did you want to create Crossover Division? Why did you want to do this? Those kinds of things interest me. So that's what often this podcast is about, is trying to get that out.
And, you know, I've actually kind of thought a lot about that. You know, why is it important for me to tell this story now? And why, what is it really about? Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it comes down to truth, you know, because we live in an age where, you know, we have alternative facts, mm-hmm. which, you know, we call those lies, actually, you know, that's what we call those. Those are lies. Mm-hmm. And, but not just truth, because what really kind of fascinates me is the degree to which lies and fictions actually affect the real world on a day-to-day basis. You know, you look at trickle-down economics as an example, and, you know, that has been scientifically disproven, you know, through research by economists for decades now. And yet it still has been, you know, the policy to treat that as something that actually, you know, works, even though it doesn't. So, you know, this lie is influencing reality. Mm-hmm. And I find that fascinating. You know, what, you know, why does truth matter? I think truth always matters because mm-hmm. it's important. We can't, you know, just kind of brush it aside. Truth is, it has to matter. If it doesn't matter, then, you know, almost nothing matters.
Of course, you realize how ironic that is coming from a fiction writer.
That's right. Absolutely. And, you know, that's something that I love about fiction is that sometimes we can use lies mm-hmm. to tell deeper truths. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's what I strive for. You know, do I hit that mark every time? Probably not, but I think it's a pretty lofty goal and one worth trying for.
See, the great thing about this book though, it will help people get a better understanding of, you're right, the foundational mm-hmm. stories that you refer to so much. There's so many people who don't understand so many of these stories, and I hope that Crossover Division will really take off and be very successful, because I would love to see people learn, oh, I didn't know that about that book, or I didn't understand that about the vampires and stuff like that.
Thank you. I hope so too.
That's just great stuff. So, okay, again, it's Crossover Division number 2, mm-hmm. and it's going to conclude on Friday, July 30th at 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
And it's good stuff. And a $4,000 goal. My hope is that by the time this posts, you'll have blown past that and you're way into the stretch goals and doing good things like that, because I think that's wonderful stuff.
Well, thank you.
You're doing so. Now, I do have to ask one question. Mm-hmm. I noticed in the video that you did for this, there's this wonderful painting on your left shoulder. And if you look at the video, you'll notice there's this picture of a dog wearing a suit. Is that your dog?
Yes, that is our Basset Hound, Otis. Okay. My sons actually got that for my wife for her birthday about I think it was last year, maybe, mm-hmm. or yeah, mm-hmm. I think it was last year. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, he's a Basset Hound, and the website that they went to let you choose various options. And one of them was the ambassador. So we call this the ambassador of him because we love puns and it's, you know, pretty dorky, but he's our Basset Hound, and he's quite the little slobber monster. But,
well, you know, it's funny. I read on Facebook one time, it says, I love all my close friends and family and the 10,000 dogs I watch on Facebook.
Absolutely.
And I get a huge kick about that because I often find myself looking at those stories, you know, you see this dog in terrible shape and then they bring it back to reality mm-hmm. here. And I love those kind of things. So what's funny is he's looking at us while you're looking at us in this video. That's the thing I love about it. It keeps our attention. If ever our eyes wander from your eyes, we look over at his.
And there's Otis staring at you. Very regal and majestic. Yes, right.
You're going to have him as a character in one of your books.
Definitely.
That'll be fun. Well, I have to tell you, Will, this is great stuff. I know it's going to be a big success, and I can't wait to see what people do and what other stories you're going to tackle. You've mentioned a couple of them already, which I think are going to be great. And so much success, and just keep doing the wonderful things you're doing, because I think we need more of this. So just keep it up.
Excellent. Thank you very much. We're sure going to try.
That's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.